Let's go exploring in some of the most unruly places on Earth. With the rise of the internet and globalization, we may think the world's been completely explored, no stone left unturned.
But our next guest says the world is still pretty mysterious, and he is here to share some of the most secret places on Earth with us. He is Alistair Bonnett, a professor of social geography at Newcastle University, and the author of the book we'll be talking about, Unruly Places, Lost Spaces, Secret Cities, and Other Inscrutable Geographies. Alistair, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Well, it is good to have you along. I want to start out talking about your definition of unruly places and this idea of geographical imagination. When I first picked up the book, the sort of the dead cities, the secret cities, I got that. But there's so much more. There are traffic circles, there are fox dens, there are labyrinths. How do you define, I guess, an unruly place? What makes it unruly?
Well, I'm looking at places that challenge our expectations of place, that make us rethink what we know about place, and what our relationship is to this very fundamental factor in all our lives. So, unruly places for me are places that take the idea of place and twist it and make us reconnect with place and its strangeness, its enchantment.
And before we start exploring those particular places, why is place and our connection to place so important to us as humans?
Yeah, I know. Well, this is a great question, and I wish it was asked more, because I think our connection to place has started to wither in the modern world when places become so similar. You get globalization and a homogenization, those sorts of forces, and they start to make a lot of us worry that the places that we know, that we care about, are no longer distinctive. And it's in that atmosphere, in that climate, that we have to start asking again, what is it about our relationship to place? Why does place matter so much? And it is, I think, that we are a place-making, place-loving species. I think it defines us as a species. We're place-making, we're place-loving. That's what we do.
So, given that, placemaking, place-loving, when you're setting out to write a book like this, where do you start? Where do you begin? It seems like there's lots of places to look, but not every place might not give you the thing you're looking for.
Well, I wanted to find places that surprised me. That's how I approached the book. I wanted to go out and see if I can locate, research, or visit, in some cases, places that I hadn't even heard of, that were really jaw-droppers. Not the kind of usual list of, hidden secret government military bases and the kind of things that we're familiar with, but places that were really off the map and new, because it's those sorts of places that I thought could help me and help readers reconnect and rethink about our relationship to place and the world.
Well, speaking of off the map, you start with a place that is more or less literally off the map, Sandy Island.
Yeah, that's right. This is one of the ones that really got me going. And Sandy Island, which was on the map for a long time, was 15 miles long, not entirely tiny in the Pacific. Kind of west of New Caledonia, a pretty obscure sort of place, not a place that gets a lot of traffic, but it'd been on the map since 1876, and it was on the Times Atlas of the World, it was on Google Earth. It was only in 2012 when some Australian scientists, decided to go and visit Sandy Island, that they found out that it didn't exist, that it wasn't there, that no such place had ever existed. Google Earth had to stitch over that spot with some sea. And what I like about this story is that, well, partly because it shows us that maps aren't completely reliable even today in 2014, but also that the Google Earth users then started uploading all these crazy photographs onto Sandy Island, So now if you visit this spot, you'll find photographs of fantastic temples and dinosaurs and the back streets of Detroit and all sorts of stuff. So it's become a real kind of, I don't know, escape zone for geo-geeks.
So why does this island matter, this idea that it was there and then it's not, and
yeah,
it's still not, so who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Well, indeed, partly you might say who cares, because a lot of islands used to be on the map and aren't anymore, and this is one of the last remaining residues of a process that's been going on for 100 years of deleting mistakes from the world map. But why it seems to matter is that in a world that is so fully known, that is so fully visible, down to like 50 centimeters or whatever it is the resolution is on modern satellites, a world that is so fully known, what we need, I think, is places to escape to, places which aren't on the map, places which aren't fully visible. There's something about undiscovered, unexplored, and hidden places, which is fundamentally fascinating, I think, to people.
We're talking to social geographer Alistair Bonnett about his new book, Unruly Places.
And you could join the conversation. Do you have a favorite secret, isolated spot, maybe in your own community, maybe in your backyard? What are the most unruly, unusual places you've traveled to? And do you agree with our guest that we need to capture our connection to place, recapture it? Put the magic back in to places around the world. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post, maybe with a picture, on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our discussion with social geographer Alistair Bonnett about his new book on uncharted territory. It's called Unruly Places.
And Alistair, let's visit another unruly place, a desert that used to be a sea. The Aralkum Desert?
Oh, yeah. Well, it used to be the Aral Sea. Aralkum Desert is a bit of a new term. I mean, it's one I had to come up with myself, because the Aral Sea is no longer a sea. It's pretty much mostly a desert. And the Kum on the Aral Kum just refers to desert. The Kum is the Uzbek for desert. What we have now is somewhere that is still on a lot of maps, a lot of globes, and a lot of classrooms around the world, but is now a kind of dried out and very dusty desert.
And you know, when you look at that, when you see photographs of that place, and you know, the idea of a large ship being, you know, 10 miles away from water, and villages where ports used to be, and they're gone now, and all the stuff there, it reminds you that when you're looking at a place, you have certain expectations. And seeing a ship, an ocean-going ship sort of lying on its side in the desert, throws everything out of context. How does that affect that whole sense of place you're talking about?
Yeah, it's eerie, isn't it? I think a lot of us are living with places that are abandoned or have changed rapidly. The Aralkum Desert is just a very spectacular example of one of the world's largest lakes that now virtually no longer exists. But many of us can just look around the corner to look at our home streets or shopping outlets, which used to be a certain way, and you know, over the past couple of years have changed rapidly. So we live in a world where the geography around us is changing at a faster and faster pace, and that is disorientating. It makes us wonder what our connection is to place, and it throws a lot of doubts. In my mind, at least, about you know what it is I'm connected to, what my identity really is.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Jeanette on the line in McGregor, Illinois. Jeanette, hi.
Hi there. I would like to nominate any of the underground, lots of caves. I'm a member of the Iowa Grotto of the National Spelunking Society, and just this weekend we were in some sinkholes, as well as some other horizontal and vertical caves. So those are largely unknown, whole other world to themselves. Lots of animals that are only underground. And that's something that most people never see.
Jeanette, thank you. I think that fits really well. And Alistair, it also reminds me of an underground location in your book, The Labyrinth, one of the closer locations to us here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, this is somewhere under the Twin Cities, St. Paul, Minneapolis. It was called The Labyrinth by the urban explorers who've been down there, because what you've got is miles, tens of miles of subterranean passageways, of caves, sometimes formed from the utility companies, sometimes the warehouses of companies that were digging out space underneath the city. There's a real hidden adventure waiting for explorers under many of our cities, and it's one of the new zones of exploration. For years, explorers, you know, went thousands of miles across the world and to chart new territory. Well, today, increasingly, just looking around the corner or going under the city streets.
Another time you spent some time underground in a very different sort of way, when you spent some time looking for a fox's den. And talk about that a little bit, because it's underground. It's not someplace people would necessarily go to, and yet it's a place.
It is a place. Well, because I was thinking about human places so much in this book, and then it just struck me, I'm missing something here. I'm missing the fact that we share our spaces with other species. And like the caller was saying, there's a lot of interesting animals and other species out there who also have their routines and their routes to work, as it were, and have their homes and their own places. And I was looking at this fox that was sitting at the back end of my garden, and I tried to follow it. I lost it pretty quick, I have to say, but I knew it went into to the local park, and I tried to track down its den. And eventually, I think I found its rather kind of scrubby little den in my local park. But it was such a, you know, prosaic, ordinary thing to do, tracing an animal and its pathways. But once you start doing that in a city, it really opens up the landscape around you. It makes you realize that these city streets are walked by other animals, and that we share our towns.
Well, that makes me think you went all over the world to check out these locations, but part of the concept here is traveling in a different way. But is there also just a mindset change that we can take with us, you know, on the walk to work?
That is it. I really think that is fundamental. I don't think modern explorers are about going thousands of miles or getting expensive plane tickets somewhere exotic. A lot of that kind of travel is a little bit cliched, dare I say it. The kind of really interesting stuff is often around the corner, and revitalizing our geographical imagination means that thinking about the places that we pass by on the way to work every day, maybe just stopping and pausing and getting out of the car even and having a little bit of a poke around, or seeing the city at a different time of day. These are all ways that we can see a new side to our own environments and start to explore the world around us.
You know, as I read your book, I was reminded sort of the impermanence of things, you know, cities rising and falling, fox dens that are there one year and then not the next, traffic circles which rise and then eventually disappear. You know, as you worked your way through all of these places, you're encouraging people to get out there and explore a little bit. Is that why it's important? Because if we don't notice it, we'll never see it?
Yeah, that's right. I am encouraging people to get out there and explore a little, but I'm also encouraging people to realize that these places and the places around us really do matter, and we can't just continue to allow our landscapes, our cities and our towns to become more and more homogenized and more similar. I'm trying to make an argument here for real places, I suppose, for distinctive places, and for hanging on to that sense of distinctiveness, because I think it's so important. And I know there's a lot of crazy, remarkable places in my book, but each of them I use to talk about why place really matters to us.
Alistair, thank you so much for joining us today, and I hope you'll come back and talk some more about these places with us again sometime.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks.
That was Alistair Bonnett. He's professor of social geography at Newcastle University, the author of Unruly Places, Lost Spaces, Secret Cities, and Other Inscrutable Geographies. So in our mission statement, Gene, is the line for the show, mm-hmm. for Central Time, the line, "Let's go exploring," from Calvin and Hobbes comics.
Sure.
And that's, reading this book, I just kept thinking of that magical sense of place that you see in that comic strip.
Well, we've gone some exploring today, and we're going to do some more in the future, too. It was a terrific book and a terrific read.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Lots of things that I had no idea about.